on Lunch Hour, talking about what you want to be talking about. Light Fare
with a serious spin, whether it be sports, faith, parenting,
balance, relationships, education, community, coaching,
starting over, how do you reboot yourself,
ministry, relevant, resonant, and real.
Whatever it is, we want to talk about it.
Call in, ask us questions, be anonymous.
Senior moments.
What would you tell your teenage self?
Whatever it is, join us on Wednesdays.
Wildin' Out Wednesdays?
Absolutely.
Join us. I'm Jackie.
I'm Karen.
Write it down. 1450 AM, WOL.
Noon to 1. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. Hey, Jackie, how you doing?
I'm good, Karen. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I just literally sat down. Alonzo's like...
He's waving at you with arms.
Exactly.
Like, look up, Karen. Look
exactly.
Up. I know. I can see him from here.
Exactly.
Arms flailing in the air.
Exactly.
Well, I guess it's a Wildin' Out Wet Wednesday.
It is. It
and
is.
And so, you know, if you're out there trekking, keep it safe. Watch those corners. You know, cars don't always see you when it's gray out like this.
Yeah.
So definitely be aware, drivers and pedestrians.
Exactly. Exactly. Hey, what'd you think of the NBA commissioner's decision?
I think it was the right decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it was the right decision, and that's a lot of what we're going to talk about today. I believe Dr. Rosalind Tompkins is on with us as well.
Yes.
And so definitely want to, you know, have some conversation and dialogue about tirades and toxic people, because over the last several weeks, this has been in the forefront, but it is also something that's probably been brewing undertone
mm-hmm.
for a very long time, and I don't think things should get to a head like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before action has to be taken.
Hi, Dr. Rosalind. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, good. Glad you could join us.
Yeah, for those of you who are joining us today, you're listening to Conversation with Jackie and Karen, and Dr. Rosalind Tompkins was with us last week when we were talking about fulfilling your dreams. And because of her expertise, we've invited her back for a second round of conversation to talk about tirades and toxic people and some of the things that we need to discover about what's inbred,
mm-hmm.
What's been learned behavior. And how do we deal with those things when they come out of your house and into the public forefront? So this should be a very lively conversation today.
Yes, I'm honored to be back with you all.
Well, thank you for joining us. I just started the conversation, Dr. Ross, with respect to the whole Clippers verdict and the NBA commissioner coming down the way that he did. And Jackie was sharing, as you heard about, you know, those things that come to the light. And, mm-hmm. and one of the questions that I'd like to talk about or open up for discussion is, you know, I find it difficult to believe, and using that as an example, that some of that did not come out in those closed door owner meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So it could not have been a surprise. And whether it was taped and people want to explore the validity of what's said in private coming out public, I'm not really interested in, but, what I do want to talk about is, you know, at what point do you, sound the alarm, pull mm-hmm. somebody aside, pull someone's coattails and say, hey, wait a minute, we're offended. Because mm-hmm. it seems to me that it's unchecked behavior that's got us to, or him to this point.
Right, right. And I agree with you wholeheartedly because, you know, one of the things that we have to realize is that things don't just happen. They don't just appear all of a sudden just like it just happened through osmosis. It is always a building up period of time. But when you have situations where, you know, there's always the thing of money and wealth and power and privilege, and there's the distinction between the haves and the have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes when you have those that have a lot of possessions, money, material things, and power and political power and all that goes along with it, it's very hard for people to confront them and check their behavior. And usually they'll surround themselves with people that'll just say yes to whatever mm-hmm. or just go along with it so that they can continue to benefit from whatever it is they're getting by being a part of that that person's life. So I think a lot of times that's what we see. We see that certain people insulate themselves, and it's really hard to get to them. And then you have the intimidation factor.
Right.
Where if I do say something, then what about my career? What about my livelihood?
Yeah.
And things of that nature.
Particularly for an employee in a subordinate role, so to speak. If you report it, if you leave it unchecked, does it happen again? Does it place a larger target on your back if you do report it? I mean, those are, real-time questions.
They happen to people almost every day.
That's right.
Some employee right now listening to this show has stepped away from their desk saying, man, I sure wish I could go to HR.
Right.
I wish it was a possibility, to go and talk to upper management. But that also means that there's an action that you have to do, an ownership stake by you has to take place, because you can't just cast your problem onto someone else and you not take an active role in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the pivotal things that we saw in this particular issue on yesterday. The players' union got together.
That's right.
And they decided that a change needed to happen, and they took an active stance, mm-hmm. whereby saying, if I have to become a free agent, I'll become a free agent. If we have to go without a coach, we'll go without a coach. And so this gives them an opportunity to say, I'm not going to sit by and be silent and allow locker room talk,
mm-hmm.
After hours meeting talk,
right.
water cooler talk, to come into my space anymore, because the players have now found their own value.
And they were prepared across the league to boycott yesterday had the verdict not gone the way that it did, the decision not gone the way that it did. So, but
that move, Karen, was dollars and cents. Let's be clear.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
All the TV time, every commercial that had already been paid for, every T-shirt that was already purchased, every program booklet that had already been printed. Every person that paid a permit for parking to be able to park cars and make money,
mm-hmm.
it would have been zero.
True. Exactly.
Right.
There are people who you have to talk their language, and it's called dollars.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's right. And the thing is, there's always opportunities. What happened was a catalyst for change. Whatever motivated this dear sister to come out and do what she did, that's just between her and whomever. But nevertheless, we have to look for those opportunities as catalysts. They had something to rally together. They had this smoking gun. They had this evidence,
mm-hmm.
and just looking for those type of moments whenever you're faced in situations where to be quite honest, you can't step forward just on your own. Especially if you have a family to take care of. It's just so many different things, so many different factors. But just as the Word of God says, what's done in the dark is going to come to the light, and there will be opportunities for the catalyst for change. And I'm just glad that the players and everyone involved, whatever their motives may be, decided to go ahead and jump on this and do what needed to be done decades ago, probably.
Yeah, it makes a difference. But you know what? You have a number of states where they do not have unions, and you do not have that kind of support.
Mm-hmm.
I know even in this area, for example, Virginia is a right to work state. What do you do in those instances when you feel as if you don't, you have to take it? My position is, it's hard. It's a very difficult decision to say, your dignity is something that should not be compromised. But at the same time, if you have a family, if you have those responsibilities, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Right, but you remember that right to work has also got some ethics attached to it. there is the employer's responsibility to treat each other fairly. There is a code of conduct that exists within the HR policies that's mandated, from the government. And so you have to not just cast that broad brush, and this is for our listening audience, don't say, I fall into that clause.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you work in a right-to-work state or in a right-to-work environment, you have to know the rules of engagement, which should be on the wall in your break room.
It should be.
Mm-hmm.
They are required to be posted. So you need to understand, and I think that's what we saw on yesterday, that the players decided that they were going to look at their bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, their argument was, we want the maximum according to the bylaws.
Right.
Somebody read something. Mm-hmm. They found what they were looking for because they took the time to be engaged. And the problem is nobody wants to be engaged because it requires work on their part.
True.
That's true. But the thing about it is with any type of bylaws, any type of laws, period, they have to be enforced. And it should be living documents. I was just talking with a dear sister the last night, as a matter of fact, and she was telling me about a situation that was happening in her church organization, and where it just seems like, you know, the one person, the pastor, wants to try to take over everything. And I was like, well, basically, you're going to have to go back to the basics. What do your bylaws say? What do your articles of incorporation say? And then there's going to be there needs to be some type of enforcement. And a lot of times, you know, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We don't even know what's going on or what these written things are, but they must be something that we can stand by. And then the issue of integrity, ladies, the issue of integrity. Mm-hmm. Our core values are at stake here. And so many times we live in situations that we're talking about toxic situations where we're living a lie, or we're living in a toxic environment. We're living where we are acting one way at work and we're believing another way inside. And that really just splits you up and down. You become a person that is very incongruent. And I believe that congruency is something that we should all be trying to adhere to. We should all be looking at ways where what's inside is what's coming outside. And sometimes we have to sacrifice. We have to give up some things.
And that's a good segue. We have Dr. Leroy Scott on, noted relationship coach and counselor. And Dr. Scott, we're talking primarily using it as a stepping stone, the NBA commissioner's decision yesterday against the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, Donald Sterling. And now that we're talking about relationships and toxicity, I think, welcome, first of all. How are you?
Hey, how are y'all doing? I'm really good, really glad and excited to be with you again on the hot topic.
This is a hot topic.
I got so caught up, I was like, oh, my goodness, hello.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Hi. I mean, but it's interesting because before we go to toxic people, because that's going to still be a part of the Donald Sterling, what caused the girlfriend or whomever to record this in the first place? That needs to be addressed because you need to be careful who's in your inner court. But that's, we're going to get to that.
We're
going to get to that. But there was something that was said that I wanted to ask Dr. Scott about.
But Jackie, set it up because we got 2 minutes.
Okay, so when we come back from the break,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Something in the speeches that either the commissioner said yesterday when they were talking about the decision or one of the other mayors stated, and he said that what Donald Sterling had was inborn, and that what he represented, he learned. And when we come back from the break, I want to talk about that learned behavior that causes people to be who they are in secret, but yet they can put on another face in public.
Yeah.
Okay. Got the question? Okay. Everybody good?
Yeah. All right. We'll so you're in the conversation. We're back. Jackie and Karen will be back after the break. You can give us a call at 1-800-450-7876.
All right. We're back. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. I'm playing with our engineer here. I'm teasing. He's like, had me come in. He wanted me to come in like moments ago, and I'm like pausing. But anyway, we're on with Dr. Rosalind Tompkins and Dr. Leroy Scott. And before the break, Jackie had posed the questions about inbred and learned behavior. And Dr. Scott, can you comment on that?
Sure. I mean, it's, you know, I think this, first of all, there's some great basketball going on this season. Let me just put that on the table.
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, I think this diversion to what I consider racial injustice, it's an unveiling of what black people already know this. We've already got a consciousness of our cultural role in society and how we navigate through corporate America and all of that. So this is not new to, I believe, the African-American community. And I don't think it's new to the NBA either, because it seems this guy's, you know, he's been, whoever trained him in his ideology of, you know, discriminating against people, or at least having poisonous, toxic views against people that are, you know, God painted their skin a different color. And that's really at the end of the day, that's the issue. God could have painted him black if he wanted to. With that being said, these toxic views that this guy has, and whoever trained him of these views, I would just say that, you know, we're ready for it. I mean, we're used to it. And I think that, you know, putting it all into context, like there's some really major things going on, like in the African-American community and outside of the NBA that have to do with racism that never gets this kind of media attention. But in reality, I think that anybody, here's an 80, 81-year-old guy. He's a billionaire, a very wealthy guy, and he's in a business, and he's got several different businesses. And the question is whether or not his ideology of minorities drives his business perspective and the way he does business. And that hasn't been talked about much, but I think that in essence, you know, the guy's married. He's got a chick on the side. He's got a whole lot of money. The chick on the side kind of rats him out and has an audio tape of the guy. With all the money the guy has, I'm thinking that for our young African-American people don't look to the owner of the team. They don't even know who this guy is. Mm-hmm. They look to the players on the court. So when we think about the psychological impact for our young people and how they're processing what's going on in the NBA, for me, I'm not really concerned about their view on the owner. Mm-hmm. Because that is not what drives the kind of clothes they wear. That's not what drives them wanting a $300 pair of shoes. That's not what drives their perception and builds their image, right? So I would like to go to the basketball court and talk and just really focus on the behaviors that the players are disseminating and the way the players are responding to working for a guy that has those kind of toxic views about black people. And whoever trained him, whoever taught him, wherever he adopted these, you know, these type of, and it's not just behaviors, it's more of an ideology, it's more of the way you think that drives what you do. And so it's not just what he does and what he says, but is his psychological perspective or philosophical perspective about people that is poisonous. And, you know, that, you know, Jackie, is something that at 81 years old, I'll just be straight out honest with you, at 81 years old, after he has had those perspectives for so long, the guy's probably not going to change his ideas. And I'll tell you why. One of the reasons why is because his ideology and his own worldview, it has worked to his benefit.
$2 billion worth.
There has been some, whether justified or unjustified, there has been some reward over the years for this guy, where he has found reward and success with that ideology. Now that's the insult to America and to athletics and to the NBA. That's the real insult.
But isn't that like the other side of the coin? Because I'm listening to you, and we know what his age is, and that means he was in the Dr. King era, the Jesse Jackson era. That means he bucked the system when there was civil rights and has found a way to use that other side of the coin to his advantage. I don't have to buy into civil rights. I don't have to do any of the thing that's good because someone else, the court has decided the black players are coming in. The foreign players are coming in. So they're going to come in, but I don't have to do anything other than put money on the table. And then once again, I'm an owner, quote unquote. So therefore, all I did was change how I own what's always been owned. But yet I make more of a profit from it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's the poisonous, that's the toxic part of the whole issue. And how do you respond to that? What do you do with that? I think the message is much bigger than, you know, the NBA said we're going to ban him for life. Well, the guy's 81 years old, you know, so what's life? What about all the years how can a person in America be so successful in business, especially in a market that is driven with the greater percentage of what drives money into the league is African-American players?
Well, that's what we were saying on the front end is because I had raised the question, this is Karen, about, you know, there had to be in those closed door owner meetings, it's something that he was said that he had said that they were aware of. And now that what's come out in public is now in private is now public. So I think what you're getting to is, you know, what is the larger message that can be sent from perhaps an economic standpoint or another standpoint so that there's a level of vetting, for lack of a better word, of ownership because he had been there for such a long time.
36 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, exactly.
But with that, you look at some of the other owners who matches his age. They came into a good old boy network. They came into a system that had already perpetuated what we see now.
And he was the oldest one because Jerry Buss just died.
Yes. And so which states that we have stemmed the tide maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is the catalyst for change that Dr. Rosalind was speaking about that moves us into saying, one, more players should become owners, invest wisely, so you can see the things that need to take place and be a part of that process. And don't just be a player, also become an owner or player owner where that's possible. Because that level of toxicity, it injures the players, you know,
and
it also injures the fans because now people begin to say, well, what all has been said that we don't know about?
But what also what Dr. Scott is saying, too, not to cut anybody off, is that let the players also examine themselves.
Oh, for sure.
And the example that they're setting because they have the greater direct impact in our community.
But then that goes back to Dr. Rosalind's point.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That I have a status. I have a family. I have, you know, gotten myself too deep into this lifestyle. And so I'm going to just play for whoever lets me play, regardless of the cost to my personhood. And we've got to, again, go back to that self-worth issue and allow players. And it's interesting because I'm not sure if we have these same issues in the WNBA, how this affects other, you know, teams across the sports spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, right. And the thing about it is when things like this happen and now it's on blast, people that maybe not, they may not even be into sports, may not even know what the teams and who the teams are, and especially, as you said, Dr. Scott, who the owners are, what have you. But nevertheless, because now this is, the media is putting it out there, every time you turn on the radio, television, whatever, they're talking about this. And so I believe that from this place, if it's done right, there could be a major movement that can bring about the shifting of change that needs to take place. And hopefully that change will include dealing with those mindsets that it's all about just the money and the bling bling and all of the other things that go along with that.
Because I know when I heard the verdict, I was like, okay, that's step one. What's the teachable moment? What's next?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's been resonating with me as a diehard sports fan, is like, okay, what's next? That's, you know, he can fight that, he can do whatever he wants, but what is the larger moment that we're going for here, or should be going
for?
Well, what will come out of it on its own, because it could be a natural outgrowth of.
True.
I'm not sure that people can say right now what will come of this. What has happened is one, I think the commissioner who spoke when he brought the decision forth, and what they're deciding was, it's not an ethnic issue, it's not a race issue, it's a humanity issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we've got to get past the color of skin, because we still have a colorism problem in this country.
Mm-hmm.
If we're all the same people, according to the Smithsonian Museum, our problem is color, not race. And so once we get beyond color, we might see humanity, you know?
Yeah, that's what I just said. I mean, our issue is not race. Our issue is color. This guy doesn't have a race issue. This guy has a problem with the color God decided to paint my face.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. And that's not, and see, and then what I'm thinking is, like, you know, you know, you say step one, the commissioner comes out and makes a statement. I didn't see that as a step one. And I'm probably on an island with a couple of other people, but by ourselves. But I didn't see that as a step one. I saw that as good PR, and I saw that as damage control for a brand. That's what I saw.
True.
For an economic brand.
True.
Which is cool, and I understand that from a business perspective, because I think a step one would have been addressing this issue with this owner when you knew those kinds of things were going on in the NBA, and letting the NBA be at the forefront of something that society in general didn't know, we knew nothing about. And the
only the people who had filed charges beforehand were party to that, because it did come out yesterday, because they asked him in the Q&A, well, how long have you known about these things? He says, well, I have heard some things.
Right.
And I have seen documents in court about some things. But until the village spoke up, there was no voice for the single person who was experiencing it. It did take that village. The NBA village had to do this collectively.
Because
it would not have come to this point without that village voice.
Yeah, because I believe when Elgin Baylor first put his case forth, David Stern's position was, we'll let the courts ferret it out. And then when he was not successful, the NBA was silent.
That's what I'm talking. Let's see, that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm getting at. A stand, when you take a stand on discrimination and unjustly treating and having a really toxic perspective of any color people, and an organization takes a stand on that without the village. You don't need a village for a stand. You don't need somebody to record a conversation for a stand. So what I'm saying is, from my perspective, I saw this as really good PR. If you have a small company, adopt the way they did it. It's really good damage control. But I'm not sure it's a step one to anything. I believe that it's just what Coca-Cola would do. It's what any good brand would do. But it really doesn't address what's underneath. And that's the frustrating part for me. Listen, I'm on the ground. You guys, you're probably on the ground. I'm a black guy. I'm working with inner city kids. 75% of the people I meet every day they can't even afford to get to the game. We know basketball from television.
So oh, absolutely.
We don't want black people in the game. Take a look around the stadium.
Oh, true, because they're not there. They're absentee. We're going to be going to a break. And I'm glad that you brought up the conversation of the people, the fans and others, because we have another conversation that we need to address. And that was that toxic blowout that happened on television between whatever housewives, basketball people. We need to address that as well, because we've got some other ingrown
issues,
things that
right.
are exploding on our streets, and we've got to discover from a grassroots effort how to deal with that.
That's right. That's right. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
We're back. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. We're on with Dr. Leroy Scott and Dr. Rosalind Tompkins. And before the break, Jackie had posed a question or segued into the other issue that's been out there from the, I guess now about a week or two, on the Real Housewives of Atlanta. And we have, you know, another situation or a different situation, but I think it's still one and the same, of representation, of how we're represented in the media. We have, and what are the consequences? Not for the individuals, I'm not really concerned about them, but again, to your point, Dr. Scott, about the network. They knew folk were coming on with these, what they're called props. They knew that there was a history there before. And then it blew up, and now they're going hands off. We didn't think it's going to be this. And better yet, we're going to make sure that on our reunion shows, no one brings any props. When, if my understanding is correct, you have the producers who are egging people on, who are inciting this because it makes good television. It makes good
viewership. Right, but that's an unstable body of a person already.
Exactly.
You're dealing with unstable people.
And this is what our children see, which gets back to your point, Dr. Scott. When you look in the Superdomes and the basketball arenas, you don't see a lot of inner city kids around on the floor. If they're anything, they've been giving tickets up in the rafters, but you don't see them around.
Yeah.
You know, but these are the images that are shaping our young minds.
Absolutely. Yeah, and they're just that. They're just that. They're images. They're pictures. They're photographs. And what I think, and it's not just our young people. I mean, it's grown folks, people. These images impact grown people. I mean, these people are adults, and they have these perspectives. And the thing about it is, you know, psychologically, you know, we adopt behaviors. So we're going to dress. It just works. Advertising works. We're going to wear what we see. We're going to do what we see. We're going to act like who we see. We're going to try to, and not just children, adults do this as well. So part of it, I think, is just television. And I think what's missing, which probably starts at home, because I'm going to tell you to reflect on, you know, the reality TV and what happened in all of that situation there. That has a great impact on adults, because I am just yesterday I was working with a couple, and you would have sworn this was their relationship was like a reality TV show, and they're coming to see me, they're paying to see me, and I'm saying, okay, well, why are you here? Because your relationship is so toxic, and toxicity has to do with poison. Like, you're calling her this and she's saying this, and, you know, I mean, just it's just toxic. And if you want something deeper than that, then what you've got to do is you've got to exterminate your relationship. Mm. And I think that, you know, that's, you know, that the way images are being portrayed, and it works because they're getting views. So you can't denounce the reality that good, crazy television with black folk fussing, fighting and acting crazy. That works for TV, and black people, we love entertainment. You know, I think they figured that out about it. The impact of that on our culture and on our society, where you've got a couple of soldiers saying, moral soldiers saying, you know what? That is not who we are.
That's not our reality.
That is not the way we live. That is, and that's mm-hmm. not a representation of the way I live my life, the way I raise my family. What percentage of people are thinking from that perspective? I would think a very small percentage, because if the percentage was greater, then they would not have the rating success that they have.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a very valid point. Dr. Roslin?
Yes. Also, we have to realize, too, that the reality of that art does imitate life. And there has to be an audience for anything. And if we put that out there and we say, okay, we talk about the television and it's just the entertainment and what they're how they're portraying us and what have you, but something on the inside has to resonate. And just as the point that you just made, Dr. Scott, about the couple who you said were imitating, you know, looked like you were in a reality show, unfortunately, that's what we are seeing. And that's what's happening in many families, too many families. And I believe that what we have to do on the ground is begin to work with our children and our teenagers and our adults and begin to help them to find the better way of communicating and being one and providing a positive picture and a role model, so that when art imitates life, we can peep into some of this realness and some of this truth. Because bottom line, oftentimes what we're seeing is a lie. But then, how much of it is a lie? Because right. There's always a seed of truth in the midst of the lie.
Mm. Because right. I don't think you can act nasty if right. you are already a person who has a temperament issue. It takes one or two things to ignite that trigger for you to just go off. For people that we knew or know who have always, for their whole life, had a chip on their shoulder, it didn't take much to set it off. For people who always looked at you crossways and thought you always had it out for them, it didn't take but a glance to set it off. And so we have to be honest with ourselves about the kinds of people who are seeming to be picked the most to be representatives of us. There's supposed to be there's always an angry black man or woman hidden inside of you. Well, I don't believe that. Mm-mm. You know, you got to get yourself together.
Mm.
That takes the fruit of the spirit. Now I you know, I'm Pastor Roslyn, okay, so I got to.
You got three pastors on the phone, Dr. Scott as well, so you in good company.
All right, now, hello. So it takes the fruit of the spirit because in the natural, ladies, you know, it's not easy when you're talking about just within your own ability or the flesh or whatever you want to call it, human nature or what have you. But whenever you get that God nature and you allow that fruit to begin to grow and become a part of your character, then yes, there's some changes there. You have that love, you have that peace and that kindness and that gentleness and all of those things as we renew our minds.
Yeah, that spirit control temperament. So for, you know, any individual who has the spirit of backbiting, then the spirit of gentleness can come alongside and help temper that tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they match up. There has to be this other dynamic, this other component that's in you. You can't just leave your face on the sideline when you pick up a script. You got to figure out how to integrate, you know, that. And I think sometimes when we talk about wearing masks, the same thing with our owner from the Clippers. How long could he have worn that mask? It was just a matter of time. How long could the ladies from the Real Housewives, you know, continue to wear that mask? Because you can't fake what's really in you.
The other thing I like to raise in conversation is, you know, like we're talking about the essence or the core of someone. Either we can cut it out or we can rot it out. You know, and I'm wondering, what is, taking your point, Dr. Scott, what is the step one then if we don't say that yesterday was it? What is the step one then for Bravo? I mean, if they're gearing, if the NBA is 70% African American, if those folks that watch Bravo TV are about 60% African American, and these are the images that they know sell, so to speak, what is the recourse or the redress? Is it not buying the Nikes? Is it, you know, going on a moratorium of, look, we're not buying anything, we're not watching television, we're not doing anything that's going to negatively impact us? Is it talking to the NBA players themselves and saying, you have to represent us better from this point forward? You change your own behavior as well as letting this, you know, go down the way that it did. What is it?
I think that's it. You know, I think that historically Black people have had to depend on God, and that we've had to depend on God's move. And I believe that this whole thing is it's a new generation move. It's like a new season move of God for minorities, not only Black people, but for minorities. And I think, because, you know, Jack, you know, it really, it's not, when I think about it, I'm thinking about what most of the young African-American boys are trying to be. They want to be rappers. Like they want to smoke weed. So these images that are portrayed are affecting the psychological. They're having a great psychological impact and actually inducing and motivating them to want to be something other than what their parents may have been raising them to be. You know, you've got kids from the suburb, very academic families, parents are educated, and they want to sell dope. Because of these images and because of these words, and look at the young ladies, they got a boo, they got a boyfriend, they're just the bot. I mean, so
the human psyche is very impressionable.
And let me say this, for African Americans, that has been our greatest struggle. Any African Americans, the greatest struggle African Americans have had is us protecting our psyche.
We have an identity crisis.
Absolutely. And that identity crisis has been shaped by the powers to be. And even in the record industry, they don't want to be record company owners. They don't want to be basketball player owners. They don't want to go to college and graduate and go to, they want to be on the court because they are represented by Black people. And Black kids look up to Black superstars. It's a dynamic that just has historically worked for young Black people. So how do you, what is step one? I think step one has to come from the basketball court.
And I think you see some of those transitions, you know, speaking from the professional side, where you have players who now are commentators.
Yeah.
You know, they don't just go off into the world, you know, sit at a retirement, you know, play golf all day or anything like that. They've seen another step, whereas the face of the commentator was always the white player.
Right.
Or someone who majored in journalism. And so now the two partner together because one brings skill and expertise and the other one brings the communication and professional radio aspect for which they were trained to do. And right. so I think that there are, I think we see a shift, as you stated, and there is a move in the right direction that the younger players now are using their voice. A younger, I say because of age, not the length of time that they've been in the league. Because coming in, rarely would you hear of a newer player wanting to ruffle the feathers of an owner or muddy the waters with their personal convictions. But they've got some age onto them, and they know that their value in the league brings dollars in. And so now they're using their voice in a positive way to say, we're opening the door to the steps. As you stated, I don't think all the steps have been identified, but the door is right. now open to have a conversation about it.
Yeah, we're going to go hit a break in a minute, but and part of that step now, I understand according to ESPN that Oprah is considering a bid for the Clippers. Maybe that's
and so is Floyd Mayweather. It'll be interesting to see the number of people who come in together.
Wouldn't it also be interesting to see if they can perhaps coalesce and come together as a group?
Well, that happens. You have multiple owners who own a variety of teams now, but there's always a majority stake owner.
Exactly. So it'll be interesting. We'll be right back on the other side. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. We're back. This is Conversation with Jackie and Karen. We're on with Dr. Leroy Scott and Dr. Rosalind Tompkins. Before the break, we were talking about a number of things, and Dr. Scott, you mentioned that it happens on the court, but I want to kind of do, perhaps, if we can, is shift a little bit to talk about the psyche. You know, we talked a little bit about inbred behavior and the institutionalization, apparently, of some, but And obviously through the power of God, anyone can be changed. But when you have that kind of psyche where you're coming from a damaged place or a hurt place, and they say that hurt people hurt other people, what is the recourse or redress? I mean, how does someone push through that to take a stand, to recapture or reclaim who they are, to really get back to their core values and integrity.
Or find some core values to begin with if they didn't grow up with any.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Anyone?
Well, sure. You know, I was thinking amen. Thank you. I was just thinking, I kind of got a little excited because I was thinking about, you know, over the past two decades, I've been working with primarily women who have been involved in addictions and so many different things that go along with that. And so whenever you come to a place of the beginning process, and I think about even in my own life, it's been over 26 years now, but I can look at it as though it was yesterday. Because when you come to the end of yourself and you say, okay, I'm really ready for change, you could either do one or two things. And I've seen it both ways. Either you could look at suicide, that looks like an option because everything else is dark and it's like, well, what am I going to do? So I need to check out of here. Or you can look at, okay, how am I going to manage this change? How am I going to become something that I'm not? And that whole process starts with that seed. It starts with that seed of faith. And believing that I can be different, I can make a change in my life, and then allowing others that can nurture that and help that person, that psyche or the soul, which is the mind, will, and the emotions. Because whenever you're bankrupt in all of those areas, then you're going to need to have a major transformation and change take place in every one of those areas.
True.
In the soul, as well as the body and the spirit.
Before we go to you, Dr. Scott, we're going to go to our caller, Richard. Hello, Richard. You had a question for our guest? Richard, you had a question for our guest? Okay, well, go ahead, Dr. Scott.
I was just listening to Dr. Rosen, kind of caught up in it. You know, I think, you know, like she said, a first step to any psychological damage is really accepting that there is damage. Mm-hmm. And until you accept that there is damage. So in my book, Unbreaking Heart, which is one of my best-selling books, that's what I talk about. You know, when the heart breaks up, then love stops. Love stops. You can front it, you can stun it, you can do whatever you want. But at the end of the day, if your heart is broken, love cannot work. Love is not going to flow. So just accepting responsibility. One of the hardest things for kids who have been traumatized through sexual trauma, one of the hardest things for them to do is accept the reality of what happened. Because trauma is really, really hard to accept. But it's the first part of healing. Without accepting it, you can't. So people have a tendency, what they do is they'll try to wear a mask. And let me just say this about wearing masks. When people wear masks, they're not really wearing a mask to hide themselves from other people. Psychological masks are worn to hide a person from themselves or from their self, their true self.
Wow.
So it's the ability to accept the fact that something really, really bad has happened and understand that, you know, the cool thing about the way God created the body, and this is for anybody that's listening to your show, because, I mean, this stuff that we talked about, this racism stuff, the generalization of what black people are when you don't really know black people, at the end of the day, that hurts. And whether what we do with that pain is going to be the most important transition that we can make. That hurts. And whether we're angry, whether we're frustrated, whether we, you know, regardless of what we do, it hurts. But the beginning of the transformation is really us accepting that we've been hurt. And the second part of it is being able to dialogue and to talk about it. And I think that's what your show is bringing to listeners. You're giving them an opportunity to hear a dialogue and to be a part of a dialogue that says, you know, I'm hurting. And historically, that has been one of the greatest barriers. When you look at our young people across the board, I mean, you got a lot of kids that are fatherless. You got a lot of pain. We've got a lot of hurt. Historically, we have had that. What we haven't had was the opportunity to say, you know what? I've been hit, and I'm bleeding, and I want to talk about what happened. I want to talk about when I was shot, and I want to talk about who shot me. And this is a generalization in talking about racism and talking about divorce and talking about abuse and talking about the unequal distribution of wealth in our community. Just saying, you know what? You did this to me. And I don't want you to say you forgive me too quickly. I want to talk about what you did.
Because you have to understand where I'm coming from.
Absolutely.
So you know the impact of what you did has on me and how it affects me.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. I'm sending people that didn't have opportunities to reconcile relationships with their dad. I'm having to send them to grave because the dad is dead. My prayer would be that every person that doesn't have a relationship with their father would have an opportunity to have a conversation with dad. If it's behind the jail cell, dad, I don't need to hear from you. I don't need you to say anything. I just want you to hear my story. Before I push a person to write a story in a book about their dad, I want to send them to their dad because I don't want you to get rich on your pain if your pain is unresolved.
Wow.
No, there's no healing for anybody there, and you can't heal other people because you're going to be writing from a place of brokenness and bitterness, not healing from that brokenness and bitterness. Absolutely.
You'll become a product for the next reality show that supposedly is supposed to represent all people.
True.
So, you know, I'm about healing. I'm about deliverance. I'm about really you taking responsibility for what happened to you and being brave enough to say, you know, I'm hurting, you did this, and I want to talk about it.
Amen.
Wow.
And if we can't talk about it, we can't talk.
True.
I think that's the thing that people have the hardest time with, is coming to terms with what they need to talk about.
Yeah.
Because that means they have to be engaged in the process.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if I couldn't confront you before and while it was happening, then I'm still not in a position to confront you in my desire to get over what has happened. And we've got to take, as you said, that ownership and responsibility, whether we were at fault or not, if we are going to move forward with our lives and then with other people in our lives, because that becomes like a cancer.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, that root gets so deeply embedded in you until it's just kind of cast itself out into every other area of your life.
That's true.
Your marriage, your relationships of dating, your kids, your employment, anywhere.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. That's true. But the thing that's so great about all of this is that it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And it is being done.
And it takes work.
And it takes work. It takes time. Mm-hmm. And it's a lifelong process.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, when you're just beginning, it's very important for people who have worked through some of those processes to share, as we were talking about, and to share and to not be ashamed or be afraid to talk about where you've been and how you were able to make it through and where you're going now, but never making it seem as though you've arrived.
You know,
because
I'm wondering,
we're all on this journey.
I'm wondering, while we have a few minutes, if we can, If perhaps because we have a lot of NBA players, as an example, who come from a level of brokenness, who come from various levels of income and things of that nature, if this experience maybe has pricked a layer or peeled a scab.
A trigger
in their own thinking that says, you know what, it doesn't matter how much money I have or what I thought. This is how I'm still viewed. And I wonder what the psychological impact.
Oh, absolutely. You have a perfect example because State Farm was the group that withdrew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is Chris Paul's endorsement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he stood firmly that if this is what it takes to make our voices heard, to render the decision or give the magnitude that this has to take as far as a decision, he was willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes from an excellent family. I've met his parents. They're great people.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not all about the money to the point where it compromises who he is as a man.
Right.
Yeah.
And that speaks volumes.
Right.
Yeah, when they interviewed him for a brief moment during the game, I've been working with people that want to cry for a long time. I think the guy wanted to cry.
Yes.
And I think he had to chop that conversation really short. And I think people like Chris Paul, I think at the end of the day, it breaks your heart.
Yeah.
It breaks your heart to know that regardless of what you accomplish, they always move the mark and you never arrive. If that is anything, that is painful.
Yes.
And us having a conversation and people like Chris Paul, basketball players, how does it affect your psyche? You thought the NBA was going to bring you to a place to where you arrive and you would be a superstar and you'd be an icon. And at the end of the day, you're an employee.
Yes.
You're an employee working in a system that degrades the culture and the color of your skin, degrades people like your grandmother, your mama, thinks very bad about your sister and your dad. I mean, that hurts.
Mm.
And that's what I mean when I say I would love to hear from the court, man. These guys represent more than this billionaire. These guys represent so much to me, to my sons, to kids that are on the streets and trying to figure out what they're going to do with their life. Really giving these guys, I'm going to tell you something, the court is not their platform.
God has
actually shifted their platform to have a greater impact and conversation from their heart. And they're great skilled basketball players, so I don't think they got to worry about a job.
Thank you. Jack?
Yeah, I'm saying you've hit it on the nail, and I was going to close out with this. I mean, Dr. Scott just gave us our Rosa Parks moment.
Yes.
I mean, because he said it so clearly. Once we think that we've gotten where we should be, somebody moves the mark.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our Rosa Parks moment, because at that moment that she realized that she was sitting where she should be, but someone else had the right to move her marker.
Mm-hmm.
Caused her to move into action. And I'm glad that we're having this dialogue because more people need to move into action. I get a lot of tweets about the NAACP being irrelevant because they haven't said or done anything. But if you believe something should be done, then join that organization or some other organization and get your voice out there. Change can't happen if people aren't making it happen.
Thank you, guys.
That's right. Yep.
All right, and we're back later next week, same place, same time, on Conversations with Jackie and Karen. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Scott and Dr. Roslyn.
We're on lunch hour, talking about what you want to be talking about. Light fare.
With a serious spin, whether it be sports, faith, parenting.
Balance, relationships, education, community. Coaching.
Starting over. How do you reboot yourself?
Ministry. Relevant, resonant, and real.
Whatever it is, we want to talk about it.
Call in, ask us questions, be anonymous.
Senior moments.
What would you tell your teenage self?
Whatever it is, join us on Wednesdays.
Wildin' Out Wednesdays?
Absolutely.
Join us. I'm Jackie.
I'm Karen.
Write it down. 1450 AM WOL.
Noon to 1.